All right, so imagine this, right? You're a street food vendor, and your burgers, they're the absolute best in town, top notch. You're thinking, okay, time to go big, time to franchise this thing. You've even got the perfect name, McDonald's Delights. Catchy, right? Rolls right off the tongue.
I can see where you're going with this.
But hold on a sec. Doesn't that sound a bit too familiar?
Yeah, I think I see the problem.
That's where trademark law comes in, and trust me, it gets interesting.
Oh, definitely. Trademark law can be a bit of a minefield, especially when it comes to names and branding.
And in this deep dive, we're going to explore a case that really shaped how we think about trademarks. L.E. Waterman Co. v. Modern Pen Co. It's a classic.
This case is a fascinating one. It gets right to the heart of a question that a lot of people probably don't even think about, you know? Can you actually use your own name for a business if it steps on the toes of, like, a well-known trademark?
Okay, so let me get this straight. You're saying even if my name actually is McDonald, I can't just open up a burger joint and call it McDonald's Delights.
That's the gist, yeah. It's not that simple.
Wow.
Yeah, this case really goes deep into the whole world of trademark law, unfair competition, and that delicate balance between personal rights and protecting a brand.
It's crucial stuff, really, for anyone in the legal field, whether you're giving advice to clients or just, navigating the business world yourself.
Absolutely. Understanding these concepts can save you a lot of trouble down the line.
All right, let's set the scene for this legal showdown. We're talking about the early 1900s.
Okay, so picture this. L.E. Waterman Co., a total powerhouse in the fountain pen world.
Like the apple of their time.
Exactly. And their Waterman pens, oh, they were synonymous with quality, with craftsmanship. Everyone knew them.
The gold standard, basically.
Right. Then along comes Modern Pen Co., and they're using the name AA Waterman and Co. for their fountain pens.
Okay, hold up. So we've got two companies, both using Waterman in their name.
Yeah. And here's the thing, AA Waterman was a real person. But he got into the pen business way, way after L.E. Waterman Co. was already a household name.
So basically, Modern Pen Co. was trying to ride on the coattails of L.E. Waterman Co.'s reputation, just because their partner happened to be named Waterman.
That's what L.E. Waterman Co. argued. They said Modern Pen Co. was trying to confuse customers, you know, intentionally and cash in on all the hard work they'd put into building their brand.
Makes sense why they'd be upset. So what did Modern Pen Co. say to all this?
Their defense was, hey, we've got a partnership agreement with AA Waterman. He's a real person, and we've got the legal right to use his name.
So it's this clash of rights then. L.E. Waterman Co. with their established brand and Modern Pen Co. saying, hold on, we're just using our partner's name.
Exactly. And the courts had this really tricky situation on their hands. They had to figure out if using your own name was a free pass, even if it caused a whole lot of confusion for consumers.
It's a tough one. Nobody wants people to be tricked into buying the wrong thing.
Absolutely. Consumers need to be protected.
So how did the courts handle this whole Waterman dilemma?
Well, the big question was this: does using your own name infringe on a trademark if it's misleading?
I see.
The courts had to figure out if Modern Pen Co. using Waterman was going to make people think they were buying pens from L.E. Waterman Co.
Right, that makes sense.
And this is where things get even more interesting. We need to talk about this concept called secondary meaning.
Now we're getting to the good stuff. What is secondary meaning all about?
So it's basically how a name, a personal name, can become so connected to a specific product or brand that it basically becomes a trademark in itself.
So even though Waterman is a common last name, in this case, it became like synonymous with L.E. Waterman Co.'s pen.
Exactly. That name had taken on a whole new meaning in the marketplace.
So even if Waterman is your name, you can't just use it however you want if people are going to get confused.
Exactly. There are limits, especially when it comes to businesses and trademarks.
This is giving me flashbacks to all those brand name versus generic arguments I used to have with my friends. Like, is it really Kleenex if it's not, the actual brand?
Perfect example. Those everyday examples show us how a name can become bigger than its literal meaning. It becomes tied to a product, a company.
So what happened with the case?
Well, the legal battle didn't end there. This case bounced back and forth in the lower courts. At first, the district court was on L.E. Waterman Co.'s side.
Sounds like a pretty clear victory for L.E. Waterman.
Right. They even issued an injunction against Modern Pen Co., like, stop using the name.
Case closed.
Not so fast. The Circuit Court of Appeals, they decided to change things up a bit. They said, okay, Modern Pen Co., you can use the name AA Waterman Co.
Oh, So a compromise.
Sort of. They added a condition. Modern Penco had to include a disclaimer. They had to state very clearly that they weren't connected with L.A. Waterman Co.
Smart move, right. So they could use the name, but they had to make it crystal clear that they weren't trying to pull a fast one on customers.
Yeah, it was an attempt to balance things out, protect the original brand, but also, you know, acknowledge the newcomer's right to use their partner's name.
Clever solution.
Well, neither side was completely happy with this disclaimer solution. So both parties appealed, and guess where this battle of the pens ended up?
The big leagues. The Supreme Court.
You got it.
So this is where it gets really serious. The Supreme Court had to decide, could Modern Penco keep riding the Waterman wave, or do they need a whole new name?
This is where Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr. steps in, and his decision had a massive impact on trademark law as we know it.
So what happened? Did Modern Penco's plan to use the Waterman name backfire on them?
Well, it wasn't a complete disaster for them. Holmes's ruling stressed that even if you're using your own name, it's not a free pass if it's going to deceive people. The law is there to protect consumers, to prevent them from being tricked.
Okay, so it's not just about having the right to a name, it's about how that name is used.
That's it.
And whether it's creating confusion in the market,
right.
Makes sense. This is important for our listeners to understand.
Absolutely crucial. It's not just about being legally right. It's about being ethical, too.
So what was the final verdict?
Mm-hmm.
Did the Supreme Court shut down Modern Penco completely?
Well, Holmes's ruling didn't completely ban them from using Waterman.
Really?
They were allowed to use Arthur A. Waterman & Co., but only with a very specific disclaimer. They had to state very clearly, not connected with L.E. Waterman Co.
So they could use the name, but they had to make it absolutely clear they weren't the original Waterman company.
Exactly.
Seems like a pretty balanced approach. Protects the established brand, but also gives the newcomer a chance.
That's what makes this case so important. It set a precedent. You know, it established this framework for dealing with trademark disputes that's still used today.
That's fascinating.
And this reasonable precautions test, as it's come to be known, it's a big deal. It helps to ensure fair competition.
I could see that. But wait a minute. You mentioned earlier that both sides appealed the circuit court's decision.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean someone wasn't on board with this whole reasonable precaution solution?
You're sharp. Not everyone on the court was happy with this compromise. Justice Milan Pitney had a very different take on the whole situation. He even issued a dissenting opinion.
Ooh, a dissenting opinion. This is getting juicy. What did Justice Pitney have to say?
Justice Pitney, he wasn't buying this whole partnership thing. He thought the whole thing was a scheme. You know, Modern Penco trying to piggyback off of L.E. Waterman Co.'s fame.
So he thought Modern Penco was being sneaky.
Yeah, basically. He argued that they shouldn't be allowed to use Waterman at all, not even with a disclaimer.
Wow. So he was taking a hard line. No compromises.
Right. To Justice Pitney, this was a clear case of unfair competition, pure and simple. They were trying to make money off of someone else's hard work, you know?
It's interesting to see this split on the court. Holmes trying to find that middle ground, and Pitney saying, nope, this is wrong.
And that's what makes this case so thought-provoking. It forces us to think about ethics in business.
Yeah. Sometimes what's legal might not be what's right.
Exactly.
And for lawyers, that's a constant challenge.
Right. It's not enough just to know the law. You have to understand the bigger picture.
So this whole Waterman saga, it's not just about fountain pens, is it?
No, it's much bigger than that. The principles from this case, they apply to all sorts of branding disputes today.
Give me some examples. How does a case about fountain pens from way back when, how does that apply to businesses now?
Okay, imagine a family business. Let's say it's a famous barbecue joint that's been run by the Smiths for generations. The place is legendary, everyone loves the ribs, and they've got this secret sauce, right?
I'm with you. I can practically smell the barbecue.
Now, let's say a younger member of the family, they decide to open their own barbecue place, and they want to use the family name too.
Oh.
See, even if they have good intentions, people might think the two restaurants are connected, right?
Yeah, they might think it's the same family recipe, the same quality.
That's where the reasonable precautions test comes in. That younger Smith, they might be able to use the family name, but they'd have to be really careful to distinguish themselves from the original place.
So different logo, different menu, maybe even a disclaimer saying not affiliated with the original Smith's BBQ.
Something like that, yeah. It's all about making sure customers aren't misled.
This case is like a time capsule, you know, from over 100 years ago, but the lessons are still relevant today. What other situations can we apply these principles to?
Influencer brands, for example. Think about all these influencers who use their names to sell products, to build their own brands.
Right. It's huge these days.
But what if their name is super similar to an established brand? You know, it could cause some real problems.
Okay, let's say we've got an influencer named Sarah Jones. She makes these awesome skincare videos, gets a huge following online. Then she decides to launch her own line of skincare products called, let's say, Sarah's Skincare Secrets.
Catchy name.
But what if there's already a well-known skincare brand called Sarah's Secrets?
Oh boy, that's trouble. Even though it's her name and she genuinely built a following around skincare, people might think she's connected to that other brand.
Right, so what does she do? Does she have to abandon her own name for her business?
Not necessarily. That's where a good lawyer can help. You know, they can figure out how to apply that reasonable precautions test we talked about.
So maybe she could use Sarah's Skincare Secrets, but with a disclaimer like not affiliated with Sarah's Secret Skincare.
Exactly. Transparency is key.
But each situation is different, right?
Absolutely. There's no one-size-fits-all solution.
This really shows how important it is to get legal advice early on, you know, before you launch your brand, before you get too far down the road.
Couldn't agree more. Prevention is way better than dealing with a lawsuit later on.
What else should lawyers keep in mind, you know, based on this Waterman case? What are the key takeaways?
One big takeaway is that secondary meaning thing we talked about. It's not just about official trademarks. It's about how people perceive a brand.
So like Xerox. It's a brand name, but people use it for any copier.
Perfect example.
So as lawyers, we need to do our research. Not just check the official databases, but really understand how names and marks are used in the real world.
Right. It's like being a detective. You have to understand the marketplace. You have to get inside the mind of the consumer.
Fascinating.
And this case also shows how important it is to think ahead, to anticipate potential conflicts. You know, lawyers need to help their clients choose names and marks that are unique and won't cause confusion.
So clear communication and careful planning from the very beginning.
Exactly.
That can prevent a lot of headaches down the road.
Absolutely.
This whole conversation about trademarks, it's kind of making me nervous, to be honest.
I understand. It can seem overwhelming, especially with social media and everything, right?
It feels like everyone's trying to come up with the next viral thing.
Right. But how do you balance creativity with legal protection?
That's the big question, isn't it?
And it's a question that everyone's grappling with. Lawyers, businesses, even consumers.
It shows how the world of trademarks is always changing.
And that's what makes it so interesting. There's always something new to learn, new challenges, new ways to apply these ideas.
We've covered a lot of ground today. We've looked at this Waterman case, seen how it applies to modern branding, and even talked about the ethics of it all.
It's been a real deep dive. And in part three, we're going to shift gears a bit. We're going to give some practical tips for lawyers and their clients on how to navigate the world of trademarks and build brands that are both creative and legally sound.
That's what we need. Practical advice.
Yeah.
So stay tuned, folks, for the final part of our deep dive.
All right. Welcome back to the final part of our trademark deep dive. So we've explored this Waterman case, saw how it affects brands today, and now let's talk strategy.
Exactly. We've talked about the why. Now let's get into the how. How can lawyers actually help their clients build brands that are creative, you know, but also safe from legal trouble? So let's say I'm a lawyer and I've got this client, super excited about their new product, ready to take on the world. What are the first steps in protecting their brand? Where do we even begin?
Well, the most important thing is research. Before you even think about names or logos, you got to do a thorough trademark search.
Okay, so we're talking more than just like a quick Google search, right?
Oh yeah, definitely. You need to go deep. You need to look at those official trademark databases, like the one from the USPTO.
The United States Patent and Trademark Office.
That's the one. This will show you any registered trademarks that are similar to what your client's thinking of.
But didn't we talk about how even unregistered names can have some protection, like that secondary meaning thing?
You're right. That's a crucial point. A really good trademark search goes beyond those official databases. You have to see how names and marks are actually being used out there in the real world.
So checking websites, directories, social media, all that.
Exactly. Think of it like detective work. You're looking for anything that could cause confusion, anything that's too close to your client's brand.
This sounds pretty intense. Are there any tools or services that can make this process easier?
Oh, for sure. There are special trademark search firms and online tools that can really help broaden your search.
That's good to know. So let's imagine we've done all our homework, we've checked everything, and it looks like our client's brand name is original. No red flags. What's next?
Okay, so at that point, you really want to consider filing a trademark application with the USPTO.
Is registration always necessary? I mean, can't they use a trademark without officially registering it?
That's true, they can. But registration gives them some real advantages, some serious legal protection.
Like what? What are the benefits of going through that whole registration process?
Well, first of all, it gives them nationwide ownership legally. So if someone else tries to use their trademark, they've got a much stronger case.
So it's like staking their claim, making it official.
Exactly. It's like saying, this is ours, hands off. Plus, if you ever end up in court over a trademark dispute, having that registration makes things a lot smoother.
Makes sense. But I bet that whole registration process can be pretty intimidating. Can regular lawyers handle it? Or do you need a specialist, a trademark attorney?
That's a good question. A lot of lawyers are comfortable with trademark applications, but if it's a complicated case or if there's a high chance of conflict, it's probably best to bring in a specialist.
So you got to use your judgment, see what the situation calls for.
Exactly.
All right, so let's say we've got our client's trademark officially registered. We're all done, right? Time to celebrate.
Not so fast. Protecting a brand, it's an ongoing thing. It's not a one-time deal. You always got to be watching out for potential infringement.
Okay, so what does that look like? Are we talking like hiring private investigators to hunt down copycats?
Aha. No, it's not that dramatic. There are a few things you can do to monitor your client's trademark. First, you can set up Google Alerts. That way, you'll know if anyone's using the trademark online without permission.
Simple but smart. What else?
There are also companies that specialize in trademark monitoring. They scan the internet, all the databases, looking for any unauthorized use. They can even send cease and desist letters if needed.
So it's like having a whole team of trademark bodyguards.
You could say that.
Yeah.
But remember, it's not just about the internet. You also got to be paying attention in the real world.
Right. You never know who might be trying to copy your client's success.
Exactly. Keep an eye out for similar names, logos, anything suspicious.
This makes me think about that reasonable precautions test we discussed earlier. Is that still relevant even if your client has a registered trademark?
Absolutely. Even with that registration, your client still needs to be careful to avoid confusion. That means being consistent with how they use their trademark.
So, always using the same logo, same font, same colors, all that.
Yes. That consistency is what builds a strong brand. It helps customers recognize and remember your client's products or services.
Like, every detail matters when you're building a brand.
You got it.
All right. Any last pieces of advice for our listeners out there who are dealing with branding issues?
I think the most important thing is to stay up to date. Trademark law is always changing, so keep learning, go to those CLA courses, talk to other trademark attorneys.
And don't be afraid to ask for help if you need it.
Yes. Collaboration is key, especially in this field. By working together, lawyers can help their clients build amazing brands and avoid those legal headaches.
Well, I think we've covered just about everything there is to know about trademarks. I hope you all found this deep dive as fascinating as we did.
Remember, building a brand is a journey. It takes careful planning, legal smarts, and constant attention. But by understanding the rules of the game, you can help your clients achieve their goals and stay out of trouble.
And on that note, we'll wrap things up. Until next time, keep learning, stay curious, and keep on diving deep.